This is Project, the podcast that follows ideas from their inception to their reality. Vanessa Lutold is a personal shopper slash stylist. With over 20 years in the business, I thought Vanessa would provide a brilliant insight on how to pursue this episode's project, Becoming a Personal Stylist. During the podcast, Vanessa recounts how supportive parents allowed her the opportunity to develop a sense of style, how boarding school was the best thing for her, and how she struggles with the same anxieties of so many who want to be in her position. Whilst this episode focuses on a specific career choice, I think there's a more universal lesson that everyone can take from it, not just future personal shoppers. So, for those of us who aren't personal shoppers, what does Vanessa do?
I mix up high-end stuff with high street stuff. I create several outfits with each piece so that they don't think they can just wear this shirt with this short, but that they can wear it with a pair of trousers, a new pair of trousers or existing clothes that they have. I have clients who will give me a specific wish list. People might say to me, I've got a big event coming up, or I don't know, I'm traveling around China, I need this kind of wardrobe. So that's how I look for clothes when I'm shopping for my clients. But some clients just want to refresh each season. So I just go into the stores and I pick things that I think are specifically for them. I don't choose the newest trends. What I wear and the way I dress is not a reflection on how I work with my client. It's very specific to each client. I usually spend a lot of time with clients in their home first, going through their wardrobe, their existing stuff, so that I get a feel of who they are and what they like. So that when they come and see me, they don't get all excited, spend thousands of pounds on clothes, and then go home and realize I can't actually wear this in my real life. You know, I got excited for a moment. Yeah, I want to buy all these new clothes, and then go home and it doesn't actually work for their life. So I'm very cautious that I consider how they live their life, what they do, they work, they travel, have kids. So I make their wardrobes very specific to them. When I shop for my clients, they have to be 100% certain that that's what they want and they need, and we work it out. I don't work on commission with any brands. I don't work by the hour. I have a set fee, so there's no pressure. I never want my customers to feel that they're pressurized to buy anything, because there is none. I'm a service that I help and try to make it their life easier and better. I do two things. I will go to someone's house. Usually when I first meet them, I go through people's wardrobes. I edit people's wardrobes. I tidy them, organize them. I take things out that I think can be reused but need a bit of altering and adjusting and tweaking. I get rid of things. You know, so often people hold on to things because it has a memory to them. Like, I wore this 20 years ago on my first date or whatever. I work out with them. Do they really need to hold on to that? You know, do they need this pair of trousers or this dress to remember that first date 20 years ago? So this is where it gets a bit emotional, and you have to be very sensitive towards people. You can't just say, oh no, we're getting rid of all of that stuff. It's going. You have to, you know, talk through them with it if they're ready to let it go. I always make notes about things that I think they need. And then I will go out and I go and pre-select everything. And then I meet them again. Mostly I use Selfridges or Harvey Nichols because they let freelance stylists come in. And they have a special department for freelance people, and I can bring in my clients. So I will pre-select everything from that specific store. But I also bring in stuff from other stores. They probably don't like it. They know that when I wheel in a big suitcase, that's what I've got in there. They don't say anything. I don't say anything. We just, because my clients will spend plenty of money from that store. So it's just it's an unsaid thing. I've done it for, you know, I've been a personal shopper for over 20 years. It's how I work. So that's how we do it. By the time they come in, everything is laid out and hung out. They literally come in. If they want any food or drink, they get it. And then we start. And, you know, at first they will look through the rails and they will think, I would have never chosen that. I would never have picked that. But I make everyone try everything on. And often they'll choose things and they'll say, I would have never, ever chosen that. Because often when people shop by themselves, if they like a navy suit or a black trouser or they wear white shirts, they will automatically go to those items in the store because that's what they feel comfortable in. But I try to just gently kind of push them out of their comfort zone a bit, or you can just be a bit more adventurous. And then we edit out things that are absolutely no's. And then there's a maybe pile and then there's a definite pile. And then we go through the maybe pile and then we start creating the outfits. If they have an event or they're going on trips or whatever, I will work with them in between. Often when I first meet a client, they're quite guarded because I go into their home. I'm a stranger. I think, you know, people worry that I'm going to judge or whatever, which I don't. I mean, it's the time that I really get to know a client in their space. Previously to the clients that I have now, I used to have clients that were more in the social, they were socialites and more well-known people. So they were definitely not people that would want to walk around with a stylist and you bring the stuff to them. That's what they're paying for. That's the service they want. That's the whole point of a personal shopper. Pre-kids, very differently. I worked with a girl. We worked with agents and for music people and also socialite people. So I worked all the time, every day. One of my clients I worked with, I went to her house every Friday. She would tell me, okay, I'm going to the countryside shooting this weekend, or I'm going to Rome for the weekend on a yacht or whatever. I would pack her bag for her for the weekend. I would Polaroid each outfit, pack it all up with a Polaroid on top so she'd know what she'd wear on every occasion for that weekend. But once I had kids, I couldn't do that. I couldn't commit myself to that anymore. So I had to totally rethink what I did. So now I just have clients that are, on the whole, very wealthy, but also not always. You know, some clients I'll see once a year or once every 1.5 years. And then I also shop very differently for those people. I do more high street stuff opposed to high-end stuff. And I kind of adjust to who they are and their lifestyle.
And so what's your process when you're developing an outfit? Like, you talked about your client who would go to, like, an award show, or if she'd be in Italy, or, you know, and you need the Polaroids on top of her outfits. How do you develop these outfits? What goes into each piece? And, yeah, I suppose, like, what is your process for structuring the outfit?
Well, for that specific client, I was at her house nearly daily. I pretty much built up her whole wardrobe. I would pack up the summer wardrobe, bring out the winter wardrobe. I knew all her clothes. I knew her wardrobe. I created most of her wardrobe. So when she would say to me, this is the brief for the weekend, I would just literally imagine what she's going to need and what she's going to do. So she's going to get down a Friday night. They're going to have a dinner. So for the dinner, I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be a sit-down dinner, quite a formal dinner, so I'll choose that. I would just imagine going through the process of that weekend, and then they go off shooting on Saturday afternoon, so you'd have to do the shooting outfits, tweeds and the kind of that stuff. And then in the evening, if it was a black tie, I'd choose one of her dresses. I just literally imagine I would be going to that weekend, and because I know her wardrobe, I was always able to pick up the right outfits for those weekends or evenings out in London or whatever. It's the same, I guess, process when I go shopping for someone. I get into their head. But I wish I could, when I go out shopping for someone, I wish I could think about two different clients at the same time, because I would think, I'll get this for this person. Oh, and then those things will look nice. I can't do that. I go into town. I go into the stores and I think about just that person. I'm just there, They're just in my head. I don't know. I think about them a lot and their life. And because I spend so much time in clients' homes and talking to them in the fitting rooms about their life, I have a pretty good idea of what they need and what they want, because I've got to know them so intimately over the years.
A good creative has at least this one thing: great taste. In this case, Vanessa leverages hers to curate her clients' wardrobes. And good taste is simply a contextualization of your likes and dislikes, which can only be confirmed through experience. Our parents often influence our early experience through their nurture. So, how did Vanessa's parents affect her early experiences, in turn affecting her taste?
So, both my mum and dad are and were highly intelligent. My dad, he went to Harvard, he went to INSEAD in France. My mum studied, she was a banker. Both highly intelligent people, really interested in life, really open. You can talk to my mum now about anything. She can talk to you about fashion, she can talk to you about music. She just reads everything, she's interested in, she's open. It ended up that my dad was turned out to be a house husband. He looked after me while my mum went to work. At the time, it was like a really weird thing. My dad was the only man at the school gates. He was always amazingly dressed. And he was had a huge personality. He was very outgoing. I don't know. They were never, neither of them worked in the fashion industry, but they were both, you know, they both were interested enough to dress really well. My dad would get his, often he used to, in the past, he would get his suits made. You know, he had beautiful clothes. In fact, when he passed away a few years ago, I have his clothes and I wear them. And I love wearing them. I wear his oversized blazers. My son wore one of my dad's ties to his funeral. You know, they're, his clothes are still here. They're still very much part of my life. And they always will be. They'll come with me. I mean, I used to wear some really outrageous stuff, like kind of way out stuff. And my parents would be like, I mean, they would raise their eyebrows and be like, oh my God. Probably in their head thinking, what the hell? I mean, I look back now and I think, what the hell? But maybe, I mean, I'm really dyslexic. I'm really struggled at school. So I was never going to go down an academic path. I've always loved art. I've always loved photography. I always loved fashion. So I guess they encouraged that and they knew that that's the path I would go down. Both my parents are really into art. I always went to art museums. We talked about art stuff and they tried to teach me stuff. Even though they're both super bright people, they never kind of pushed me to go. I mean, I didn't go to university. They didn't push me to go to university. They didn't push me to be anything other than what I wanted to be. And I loved that. They just always encouraged that. They didn't have expectations of me to do anything. They just let me be, let me choose my path. And I'm also grateful that they realized that because of my dyslexia, and I was really struggling at school in Switzerland because they don't acknowledge dyslexia in Switzerland. They don't believe it exists. They don't teach kids with dyslexia. They sent me to a boarding school here in the UK that was just for dyslexic kids. And it was kind of the making of me because I felt fine. I felt like, oh my God, I'm not stupid. I just get it in a different way. And I just need to be taught to read and write in a different way. And then I can read and write. And that was, you know, I'm so glad that they didn't make me stay in Switzerland, I guess. But that, you know, it was sad for them. I'm an only child. They sent me away to boarding school in another country. I'm sure it was really tough. But they did it for the best of me, you know, because it was the best for me to do that. And I'm really grateful for that.
And how did that develop your style?
Well, for the first time, I had to wear a uniform. In Switzerland, you don't wear uniforms. So that was like, Christ, I have to wear a uniform. But I totally tweaked and made the uniform my own. I was constantly in trouble for my short. Obviously, my skirts were too short. Of course, who doesn't roll up their skirts? But I cut them, I shortened them, I tightened them, I could barely sit in them. I wore big shoes I've got big ribbon. I just totally made the uniforms my own, which just, anyway. They dealt with it at school. And then as soon as lessons were finished, you could get changed into your own clothes. Oh, I loved it so much. I used to get so dressed up. I used to love getting dressed. My outfits, I used to think about that in the day. What am I going to wear for homework at boarding school and dinner time? And then back to your dorm, consumed hours of my day, what I was going to wear after school for like 2 hours. And it was the school for dyslexics, but it was also a Quaker school. So it was quite hippy-dippy. It wasn't strict. It kind of let you be. So, and that kind of gave me the freedom, you know. In Switzerland, I lived, I guess, a very protective life, probably quite privileged. And suddenly I came to this boarding school, this Quaker hippie boarding school where it's full of dyslexic odd kids. You only paid as much as you could afford in the school. So there were kids from every background there, which I loved so much. And you were allowed to express yourself after school more so than in uniform. And yeah, so that's how it all started. And that's where it also actually started when I came home in the holidays. I started vintage shopping. I started then and I loved doing that. And I felt confident. I never felt I had to follow the herd. I always wore what I wanted to wear, no matter how weird or how different it was. I never cared.
Vanessa's parents influenced her style through exposure to the arts and, importantly, to their own expression of style. However, the best thing Vanessa's parents did was put her in a situation where she could explore and express herself freely. Boarding school incubated Vanessa's passion, allowing her to start practicing her craft years before most others find it after leaving school. Even after finding it, most people don't practice their passion for a living, no matter how skilled they are at it. So how did Vanessa go from dressing herself to others?
I think what was really, really useful to me, and that's how I got into it, I worked for Harvey Nichols. I worked in their personal shopping department. I then became the assistant manager and I was there for like 3.5 years. That was my grounding for personal shopping. That's where I got experience. I mean, I used to work on the shop floor. So I guess that was my groundwork, because you learn how to deal with clients, with different people. You know, some people come to you and they really want your help and they're open to anything you say. Some people are quite defensive and guarded or shy or private, and it takes time to warm up and for them to open up to you. So I guess all those years of working on the shop floor kind of gave me the groundwork of working out how to deal with people and getting the information that I needed out of them. You know, at the time, Harvey Nichols had just built this personal shopping department. It was a really big deal. You know, at the time, it was a very exclusive thing. Mm-hmm. There, working there, I met the most incredible people. I have served the most awesome people. One of my clients was a band. At the time, a really well-known band. Their manager used to call me up and say, "We're coming in." And I used to go up to the fifth floor and get the whiskey and the champagne ready and bring it down, and they'd come in, and there's a time where you could still smoke, and I mean they used to come in and smoke and drink, and I'd be there in the evenings. Harvey Nichols was closed for the day. It would be me, a security guard, and just these boys, and I'd shop for them, and it was amazing. I've had some amazing times. I've met some incredible people. You know, it was a long time ago. It's my personal shopping is very different now. But those are all things, those are experiences that definitely were so beneficial to me. But I didn't ever study styling. I never went to college to do anything like that. It's just something that I just fell into. Joe always says, "Why don't I get an assistant when I'm really busy?" Because I pre-select, I have the client, and then I have to do all my returns. So obviously my favorite part is the hours I spend with the client. The hours that I'm either on the tube or walking down the Oxford Street with 5,000 bags in the pissing rain are the worst bits. And he always says, "Why don't you just get someone?" And I'm like, I can't. By the time I've explained to someone how I work, I can just do it myself. Plus I can't, you know, when people say they want to just kind of shadow me and work out how I do it, I'm just like, it feels weird to me because I don't really know. I know what to do, but I can't really explain it. It's so, I always talk about this feeling that I have, but it really is. I kind of go, I don't know. I can't explain how I do what I do and why I choose things. I just look at certain things and I think, yeah, they're going to work for that person. It's nothing that I've ever learned at college. I did go to fashion college, but I studied business and finance of fashion because I used to think I want to be a buyer.
Again, Vanessa found herself in an environment where she was supported in practicing her styling, this time providing her an education on how she can apply it to others. This is the catalyst that turned her passion into a career. To further pursue styling, Vanessa left Harvey Nichols and set out as a freelancer. And to make it as a freelancer, she needs to take on the business side of things too. So, how does a personal shopper make money as a freelancer?
And how do you actually make money from this then? Like, how do you structure your business?
I have very set fees. I have a set fee for going to someone's house and doing that. And I have a different fee for when I do the shopping for clients. And that's a set fee. Like I said, I don't work on commission with any stores. I don't charge by the hour. In the past, when I used to work with very different people, I did charge by the hour because I worked all the time and I needed to charge by the hour. So that has changed. But yeah, and I haven't, my fees have been the same for way too long. Everyone keeps saying I need to up them, but I feel I'm not good at talking about money. I'm not good at asking about money. It makes me feel hugely uncomfortable. So that's something I definitely need to work on.
So how does the commission situation work with the stylists?
Stores and brands will offer you between 5 to 15% commission on what you sell of theirs. And then you show your clients all our goods and you push our goods and that's how you build the commission. But I can't do that because it makes me feel very pressurized to just show specific brands. Also, I use so many different brands and so many different stores because each season things are different. And one season, this bag brand might be really great and I love it and I will show my clients those kind of handbags from this brand. But next season, I might not like the collection at all. But if I work with them, there's a certain pressure to keep showing clients that. And then I feel like I'm actually showing clients things that I don't genuinely believe are amazing or would be amazing for them. But I'm doing it because I've got this business relationship with this brand. So I don't do that. I can't do that. It doesn't sit right with me.
Vanessa is a true artisan, sacrificing profit in the form of commission for an unadulterated product. Providing her clients with an unbiased approach to personal shopping allows Vanessa to give her clients the best service, as she is free to offer clothes she believes they need, as opposed to what she is obligated to by brands. However, Vanessa's aversion to talking about money has definitely stifled her business, especially with regards to her outdated pricing. So I asked Vanessa if she was happy with what she had achieved with her personal shopping. And if she was talking to her younger self, what would she say to them at the start of their career?
Yeah, I feel like I could probably do more. I mean, why don't I even have a website? I mean, I should have that. There's a bunch of stylists that we all know each other because we've all worked in the same industry for a long time together. And we see each other in stores and stuff. And why don't I, I don't know why I don't do that. I guess sometimes I'm scared of doing things like that in case it doesn't work out. So I don't do it. I kind of know what I'm doing. I feel like I'm okay at what I do. I should change. I should build my business more. It's always good to evolve. It's good to change. It's good to grow. But sometimes I'm just kind of, I don't because I'm worried it's not going to go right, which is stupid because I keep telling my children, just do whatever you want to do. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter. But I clearly don't listen to it myself. The advice. I'm afraid of failing, which is terrible, a terrible reason, because failing is good, it's fine. Or I feel like I worry that maybe if I do something else, people aren't going to like it, and I feel like, oh God, I'm not very good at what I'm doing. So I don't put myself out there as much as I should.
So if you were going to talk to yourself,
yeah,
when you first started starting, what would you say?
What I would say then and what I should say, what I'm probably saying to myself now, is be brave and really kind of go out there and do as much as you can and take up every opportunity you can, every offer you can, and don't let fear stop you or not take up an offer because you're worried it's not going to work out. You know, I get sometimes people approach me and they say, well, why don't you work? Let's do this together, whatever. And I'm like, oh, I'm not sure. And don't, just do it. Just do what you've got to do, what you love. You know, if you find something that you love, styling is, it's so much fun. You know, it really is. It's not brain surgery. It's not like important on that level, but it's really fun. And if you really love clothes and fashion and being with people, it's like the best job ever. It really is. It really is fun. Life is so serious, and there's so many things to worry about in life. If you find something that you love, then you've got to do it.
A message we all often hear, yet never act upon. Vanessa provides a strange example of this. Whilst having found something that she loves, and then having done it for over 20 years, the fear of letting go and trusting in herself is still prevalent. And whilst Vanessa's happy with what she's achieved, it seems there could be more. So, using Vanessa's words, if you find something that you love, then you've got to do it. And don't be scared it doesn't go right. Powered by Transmission Roundhouse.